It is a very good afternoon. You wouldn't think it was the middle of August, would you? No matter where you happen to be in the country at the moment, there seems to be a bit of rain going around. And also wind. I looked out the window there a few minutes ago. The wind is howling and the rain is coming down. Maybe in some parts of the country it's okay. But I can tell you where I am, it's not. It's pissing out of the heavens. Anyway, I was only saying that a few minutes ago. I would hate to have come to Ireland as a tourist and paid a huge amount of money to see the wonderful green fields and sunshine and be walking around in the pissings of rain in the middle of August. Anyway, now, a lot of people are quite angry in relation to Thornton Hall. And I'm going to come to Thornton Hall in a second. But before I mention Thornton Hall, of course, the village of Dundrum in Tipperary. Everybody says Dundrum, they think of Dublin immediately, but it's not. It's in Tipperary. It has, according to Grip Media, around 200 inhabitants. And the government is forcing local people at the point of a riot squad baton to accept at least 280 people who are claiming asylum. But a possibility that this will be expanded to 550 arriving very soon. As the locals have repeatedly said, they will be a minority in their own little village. It's, I suppose, according to Gripped as well, they calculated it, it's the equivalent of landing 30,000 asylum seekers into Dunleary or 20,000 into Malahide and expecting the locals not to have any concerns about it. Of course they'd have concerns. So there is no doubt this situation is unacceptable, as is the situation in Coolock, where the local community feel they have no say or engagement with the government. Not only that, the government keep trotting out this line, you don't have a veto as to who moves into your area. I can tell you, that's a load of nonsense. Absolute and utter nonsense. Because the reason we don't have a veto is because the government brought in legislation where you cannot object. Well, as a citizen of the country, if you live in an area and a developer wants to build an apartment block with 100 people in it down the road from you, you do have a veto. You can put in with the local residents a planning objection. It may be cancelled altogether. It may be reduced to 50 people. They may have to paint it green. They may have to make them smaller. You know, there's lots of things you can do. So you do have a veto. The idea that the government keeps saying you don't have a veto. You do have a veto. But when it comes to refugees and asylum seekers, you don't have a veto because the government have said you don't have a veto. Now, the government is planning to continue taking up to 30,000 refugees, and the plan is to use larger reception centres as the numbers grow and more people arrive in Ireland. You know, for a better life, etc., etc. From what it seems, all off the back of the taxpayers' money, because, of course, last year we spent $4 billion on this chaos. Now, the latest venture, of course, is Thornton Hall, which was meant to be a new prison many, many years ago. Bertie Ahern decided to build a new prison. It's out somewhere at the back of the airport, in the middle of kind of nowhere, but there are some local residents who up to now have had a reasonably peaceful and quiet life. This will be a large reception centre for refugees, but has already gained local objections, even though it's practically in the middle of nowhere, as I said. Now, Fatima Gunning from Gripped reported yesterday that a number of heavy goods vehicles have been arriving at the site of Thornton Hall in County Dublin this yesterday afternoon, as the plans to open up what is expected to be Ireland's biggest asylum centre. Now, again, they don't know the numbers. I'll try and find out in a second. But the Department of Integration says approximately 35 acres of the site is being developed by a private company called IEMS, who are contracted by the Department of Children, Equality and Disability Integration and Youth. That's a long name for a department, isn't it? To help provide safe accommodation for people who have applied for international protection. Gripped has seen multiple videos and photographs from recent anti-asylum centre protests, by the way, where members of the Public Order Unit, the Garda Síochána riot squad, did not appear to be wearing any visible identification or to have turned on their body cameras while on duty. So, look, getting back to Thornton Hall, what is the answer? So people said they don't want it in their communities. Now they're building it in Thornton Hall, which is a bigger reception centre, and people still have an objection. But just do we have an objection to this amount of people coming into the country? Is that the problem? I want to know what the objection is and let us know. And I want to try and be fair in this debate today, but let us know. So this is in the middle of nowhere. Now, there are some locals, obviously, who are going to be affected by this. It's in the middle of nowhere. So what is the objection or what is your objection? You can text us at 085 122 55. That's 085 122 55. Let me go to Fatima Gunning, who was on site yesterday from Grip Media. Fatima, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lilac. I wasn't actually there yesterday, but I was speaking to people who were there from the local community.
Okay.
And they were saying that, yeah, although you're right there in saying that the site is a little bit out of the way, but what I was told was that there's concerns, you know, particularly from surrounding areas like Coolquay, Ashburn, Kilcoskin, and that, you know, Finglas is about 10 minutes from the place, Swords 15. So the people are basically saying that although it is in essentially, you know, an isolated area, and I suppose the government or perhaps responding to people saying that they don't want these reception centres slap bang in the middle of their town by doing this. But I think that there's still an existing concern that, you know, as we've seen with previous plans to house 950 Ukrainians in Animo, which is basically a road in County Wicklow, the village of Animo is basically a road in County Wicklow. There were plans by the operators of that site, which didn't go ahead past years new, to bus the almost 1,000 residents three times a day to neighbouring towns like Bray and Greystones. And that would be to collect their social welfare, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that that's the concern that is held by people in the surrounding areas, that although, yeah, these up to 1,000 men, I believe, will not be living exactly on their doorstep, that they will more than likely be going into the towns. Okay. You know,
are they the numbers of those? Because I've heard mixed reports on numbers between anywhere between 500 and 3,000. Now, this is a really big location. When I was running for election, I went up to Thornton Hall. I did a video up there. It's a massive location with massive potential to build a huge reception centre. So, I mean, the government are saying it's going to be one of the largest reception centres. So there have been suggestions of 3,000. So what is, do we have any idea of the actual number that they're going to put in there?
Well, from the documents that GRIP has seen, the projection is up to 1,000, which will be carried out on a phased basis. Like, it's not like they're going to just dump 1,000 people there overnight. But, you know, I think that is the projection that they're working with at the moment. Mm-hmm. Of course, as you said yourself, if Roderick O'Gorman is expecting to bring in 30,000 people for a year, they're going to have to go somewhere. So who knows?
And the idea is this is meant to be temporary while people are being assessed and their applications go in for asylum. But the problem is GRIP has reported recently as well, that even if their applications are refused, they just appeal it. And then eventually, when they get refused four or five times from appeals, they can apply for the permission to remain anyway, and nobody actually gets deported. So this could end up in a long-term situation.
Well, I mean, it's hard to envision how it wouldn't if the government is projecting, like, keeping to bring in those very big numbers. Like, I think they're very big numbers for Ireland, which is a relatively small country, obviously. Mm-hmm. It is hard to see. The statutory instrument, I believe, for the Ukrainian BOTP, the Beneficiary of Temporary Protection, I believe the initial phase on that was supposed to end next year. I think it's hard to see. I don't know. Maybe it will. I could be surprised, but it's hard to see.
No, I don't think that's going to
end. Amount of people, yeah.
I think that'll be extended probably as well. So I think we're going to continue to do this. And as reported during the week as well, we're spending over $4 billion in 1 year last year in relation to refugees in this country, all off the back of taxpayers' money. And it doesn't look like it's going to get any better. When you spoke to locals, did you speak to some of the locals in the area themselves? Is there many locals around Thornton Hall itself? I spotted a few houses when I drove up there, but is there many locals in that area?
To my knowledge, there's not a whole lot. Like, I was told that there's a lot of, you know, there's a little kind of a chocolate factory, and there's a school, and there's a few small businesses. But again, I think the bigger population would be from those surrounding areas, Coolkey, Ashburn, Kilcoskin.
Mm-hmm. And in relation to where they're at now at this stage, and there's been stories, obviously, that, you know, trucks are arriving with no registration plates. There was a video going around during the week of what seemed to be foreign men working there with balaclavas on them, which was all very strange and sinister looking as well. And you also put a request in as well as to why numerous pictures had appeared on different protests, including there as well, with guards with no numbers on them or no identification numbers. Now, they replied back and said the guards should have the numbers on them, and you sent back some pictures. What was their response, you know, when you sent back the pictures saying, well, then why have these got no numbers on them?
Well, at first they tried to say that they don't comment on third-party material, to which I replied, well, you know, I've seen this and some of these pictures were taken by GRIP. So, I mean, it's not third-party material, I don't think, in that instance. And then they just, and I said, like, well, if in circumstances where individual members of An Garda Síochána are unidentifiable, where people think that they may have been mistreated, how are they supposed to identify them to GSOC? And they just said, if anyone feels that they have been mistreated by a member of An Garda Síochána, please contact GSOC. So, I mean, they didn't answer the question, to be honest with you, Niall.
That's grossly unfair because, as you said, I'm not suggesting they do mistreat that many people, but if they do mistreat people, you're right. If somebody hits you across the head with a bat and you're doing nothing wrong and you're just standing at the side of a road doing nothing and you get attacked or something by the guards, you are within your rights to know who's attacking you.
Right, and it was, we weren't accusing anybody of wrongdoing. We were just saying, like, as to your own policy, which states in the Garda policy documents that they must be identifiable at all times on duty, except for, of course, undercover Gardaí for obvious reasons. But yeah, we were just basically asking them why it appeared that they were not adhering to their own protocol, and they didn't answer that.
In relation to their cameras as well, what is the protocol around the body cams? They're meant to have them on.
Well, I think it's up to the Garda's individual discretion in a situation where, I suppose, you know, they're interacting with the public or whatever is going on, that they want to turn it on. And that's obviously for their own safety and for the safety of the public. That's what it's supposed to be for, to reduce, you know, he said, she said, like, if it's on camera, you kind of can't really deny what happened.
Yeah.
But there was one particular instance where it did appear that a certain, I think is a Axon body camera was not turned on during a situation of unrest in Coolock. So we're just wondering again, maybe why, you know.
Yeah, you would imagine they would be the situations you would more than likely want to have it on for both the guards' protection and obviously the protection as well of protesters in the area. So I said the main concern here is people being bussed into smaller towns locally, be it Swords and Finglas, which you said are Finglas only 10 minutes away, Swords 15 minutes away, and some of the other towns as well around Ashbourne and all those other places. They can be bussed around to all those different places. By the way, at a cost to the taxpayer as well, which seems really inconvenient then to put them somewhere where they can't actually access anywhere. They're going to get quite bored, aren't they?
Well, you'd assume so, really. Like, you know, I know down in Newtown and Kennedy, there appears you can't really see inside, of course, because they put a huge fence up there with, you know, smart CCTV that kind of follows you around if you're outside. But yeah, they do seem to be doing some kind of sports for them inside in there. But, you know, I've been sent home security camera footage of a brawl, which appeared to be involving asylum seekers from Crooks Lane in the last couple of days, where, you know, a fight spilled into a lady's front yard. So, I mean, you know, if in circumstances like that, you can kind of see why people might have concerns that these guys are unvetted, because, you know, they are.
Because they're unvetted, obviously, we don't know who they are. We don't know very much about them. Some of them obviously carried no identification coming into the country as well. Some of them may have, but some of them didn't. Well, look, Fatima, let's keep an eye on the situation in Thornton Hall. I can imagine it's probably going to get worse rather than getting better, because locals are not too happy and there are protests in the area. And already, just like Coolock, they've already put up the huge big fences around to make sure people don't get any visible pictures of what's going on inside. It's all very sinister, isn't it, the whole thing?
Yeah, one of the residents up there was saying that, you know, it felt like the Berlin Wall.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. It does look like the Berlin Wall. Well, listen, Fatima, thank you very much indeed. And you're doing a wonderful job in Grip Media reporting on all of this. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
There you go. Fatima Gunning from Grip Media reporting on what's happening in Thornton Hall. Now, I mentioned Dundrum Village as well, but if you have any comments in relation to Thornton Hall in particular, obviously Dundrum is a different situation. It's a small community where you've just doubled the population and the locals feel like they're a minority in the area. But I suppose the argument from some on the left is, well, look, at least with Thornton Hall, it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's not bothering anybody. But as Fatima rightly said, you know, they're not going to stay there all day, and they will be for providing a free bus service for them, you know, to go into local towns during the day, because obviously they couldn't expect them to stay there. Although, personally speaking, I believe they should have to stay there, because I believe until you have your application has been approved, I believe you should be detained, because that should be the law of the land. Jessica, hi, how are you?
Hi, Neil.
How are you doing? Jessica, well, there's an argument. Look, this is what the people wanted. You know, they don't want them in their communities. They want them out in the middle of nowhere. Now they're out in the middle of nowhere, and they're saying people are still giving out.
Yeah, well, you can argue that people didn't want them here in the first place.
Mm.
But of course, you know, the lefties will go into a fit if you said that.
Yeah,
they're calling you every name under the sun. But...
Hello? Are you there, Jessica? Hello, Jessica? Okay, I think we've lost Jessica there.
Sorry, is that better now?
Are you back?
I think so, yeah. Sorry, the signal's crap around here.
Okay, yeah, sorry, so you said, yeah, the lefties will go into a full-on meltdown if you said we didn't want them at all. But isn't that what some of the politicians have said? That no matter what you do, the locals will not want them in the area. It's not about negotiation. They just don't want them end of.
Yeah, but who started all this? Mr. O'Gorman, when he sent out his millions of tweets all in the Google translated languages. So whose fault is it? Who did this? Who brought all this onto the front doors of us? It was him.
But they would argue that, you know, well, it's okay for, you know, genuine asylum seekers to come into the country.
They can argue all they want. They can argue all they want. But I will die on the hill that Roger McGorman caused all this by sending the tweets that he did. He knew damn well what he was doing. He knew full well prisoners land that was a land of milk and honey. He knew damn well. Now look what's happened. The way I said it here, your producer there when you text me asking if he wants to come on, the way I see it is that this horse has bolted. It's running around the track and there's no sign of stopping. You're overfilling a bucket that is too much filled. And they keep doing it because they're just stubborn. They don't want to admit, yeah, this is our fault.
But you'd imagine they would want, but you know, yeah. But you would imagine they would want to do something about it with an election only a couple of months away. You'd imagine they would want to do something about it.
Yeah, well, the thing that they should have done was said to O'Gorman, "What the hell were you doing, sending all them tweets? Are you crazy? We can barely help us, and now you're more or less giving everyone the green light. Come on over." Mm-hmm. Someone should have said something to him, but no one said something to him. He was never reprimanded for it. Anyone in their right mind would say, what were you doing sending those tweets out? Are you crazy?
It was a bad idea, and I think everybody realises that. I mean, the tweet more or less said, come to Ireland, you know, the land of milk and honey.
And then
you'll get a front door key.
Now about it. Yeah. Nothing is that shit about it. Oh, we're putting them in whether you like it or not. You can't say that.
Well, hold on, he's not the only one who said it. Leo said it, Avada Bacic said it, Mary Lou said it.
I know, but
how
totalitarian does that sound? We're doing this whether you like it or not because we want to do it.
Yeah, they said you have no veto. They said you have no veto as to who moves into your area.
Yeah, well, they can shove that thought up their arses. I don't care. Mm. Seriously, I honestly don't care. They knew what they did. Especially O'Gorman, he knew what he was doing, sending those texts. They could have said something to him and reprimanded him and saying, we do not stand by what he said. But no, I think they wanted to full well do this.
Well, see,
I honestly think they're reveling in it.
O'Gorman isn't on the radio or on the show right now. But if he was on the show, I'm sure his answer to you would be, well, hold on for a second, Jessica. Yous were given out in Coolock. Yous were given out in Newtown, Mount Kennedy. Hang on. And now we're putting them in the middle of nowhere and you're still giving out.
Yeah, because what they should have done was send them all back home. You have no papers, you have no nothing. Sorry, there's the door. Don't let it hit you on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what they do in many other countries. If you did that in America, if you did that in Australia, you think they'd let you in with open arms? They'd say, no, you don't have nothing. Get fucked. Pardon my language, but they'd tell you, there's the door. Don't let it hit you on the way out.
Yeah, but we'll see. But the problem is, we're part of the EU. As you know, Hungary. Hungary have just been given a 200 million euro fine for not taking in refugees.
Oh, like, I know people say if we let the EU be the worst thing imaginable, but you know what? The pros are actually starting to outweigh the cons at this point for me.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm just thinking about this now. 200 million would be an awful lot better than 4 billion we spent last year.
No, but how is that a sad state of affairs that I'm actually thinking, you know what? Being in the EU is actually more of a con than it was a pro. Like you said when you were campaigning, before it was a grand little thing, it was like a community. What is it now? It's honestly a cesspit. It's like a little totalitarian thing. Like, we're doing this whether anyone likes it or not. We're doing it, regardless of what you think or feel. And you just have to get used to it.
No, and I did say that the EU, its concept was great, but it's turned into a cabal and a dictatorship. But stay there.
They all put their hands up and, like, yeah, let's go ahead with it and feck the rest of what you all think.
Yeah, well, look, you know, you all had your opportunity in the European elections, but sadly people voted for the same gobshites to go back to Europe again.
Oh, I don't know how that even happened. I was mind blown.
Stay there. Let me go to Alva as well. Alva, hi. How are you?
Hi. Good.
Alva. Okay. Yeah. The argument is, if Roderick O'Gorman was on the air right now, he'd probably say to all of us, "Listen, yous were given out when we did it in Coolock. Yous were given out when we did it in Dundrum. Now we're kind of putting them in the middle of nowhere, and yous are still giving out."
You know, I think people are always going to give out because how couldn't they? This has just gone beyond. So crazy. He's a silly man, but they're all very, very silly for doing this.
Mm. I think it's more than silliness now at this stage.
I was watching the videos of Thornton Hall yesterday, and it was very, very eerie, like just watching all the low loaders with the construction materials and everything going in, and no one can do anything to stop it. Like, it's happening whether there's protests going on or not. It's going to happen, and nothing can stop them from doing it.
Yeah, there are obviously there's less protests in Thornton Hall because there's less people living in the area. There's only a small community. I do feel sorry for the small community in the area. There's only a few sporadic houses dotted around because I was up there, I had a quick look. And, you know, they've had the kind of quiet life up to now. I don't know how that life is, how quiet that life is going to be when you move in 1,000 people, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, I live in a very small village, and we have just in the last couple of days had all the Ukrainians evicted from the hotel, and all we know is that it's now going to be an IPAS centre. And I mean, we're a Gaeltacht village, so it is going to have an impact. And there's no protest. There was a very small peaceful protest a few months ago. No one listened to us. It seems as though no one really cares. So it's very, very quiet here. And I don't know how that's going to be months or years down the line.
And Alva, when you say they moved all the Ukrainians out of the hotel, where do they move the Ukrainians to?
From what I know, some of them will be going to East Galway and some are moving to Mayo.
Okay, to what better better accommodation?
You know, it's like musical chairs at this stage. Like, I don't know why. I think it's because the hotel is now an IPAS centre and not a refugee accommodation.
Okay.
You know, it's a different system.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's sad for them because, you know, they've been here for 2 years. A lot of them had jobs here and kids in the schools here. So, yeah, very sad. And the people that are coming in are most of them from Africa.
Yeah, well, they'll be men. They'll be primarily men.
Yeah, men.
Yeah. And what's the population of your small village? Is it small? How small?
I couldn't tell you, Niall. I actually couldn't tell you. I was trying to find out what that was. There's no clear answer, but we're a very, very small village. One shop, one school.
Right, okay. So similar to what we've seen in Dundrum. I mean, what we're seeing in Dundrum is outrageous. I mean, there's a possibility that 550 will be moved in, right? There's only 200 people live there. And, you know, Gript kind of put it into perspective when they said it would be like putting 20,000 people into Malahide or 30,000 people into Dunleary and expecting the locals just to roll over and say nothing. I mean, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do you know what that is, Matt? So that is what they call ethnocide. You're ethnic cleansing because the people in that community have their own, you know, cultural beliefs, their own religious beliefs, their own behaviours, their values. That's an ethnic cleansing of that community. And I feel the same is going to happen here because we're a Gaeltacht village. So would you think so?
Yeah, well, you're going to have people who have no interest in learning the Irish language, probably. That's one thing.
Yeah. Now, the Ukrainians actually were taking part in Irish language courses here.
Yeah.
I don't see these new guys doing that.
No, I can't imagine they would be too keen or too interested to do that. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Okay, but the idea that the government, instead of doing the small IPAS centres like your village and Dundrum, you know, and other areas that Jessica mentioned as well, that they want to do, say, you know, 3 or 4 larger centres that will hold 3 or 4,000 people each, does that make it any better?
No, I think that's worse, to be honest, because it's almost like a little mini city of just almost like a slum, I guess. Only, I don't even think they're living in slums. I think they're living it up. We're the ones living in slums compared to them.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'd like to be living, you know, 3 to a room or whatever it is there, you know, with a kind of one bathroom for 10 people. I don't think I'd like to be living like that either.
Well, have you seen the images from Clonmel, what the proposed development is there?
No, I haven't.
It's almost, it's like just loads and loads of units kind of all lined up like a little estate or like a little community.
Oh,
there.
I have. Yeah, I've seen it. Another one, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just insane when you think of the small population that they're going into. You know,
but they're claiming this is all temporary. But it's not going to be temporary because realistically, you know, there was only a report in the paper today that the population is growing quicker than the amount of housing that we're building, right? So in other words, the housing crisis is not going to be sorted out in the next decade. So because the housing crisis is not going to be sorted out and we're still, you know, the supply and demand is still a problem, these people are going to be languishing in these hotels, accommodation centres, reception centres for years.
Years, no. Because if you think of it, say the normal Irish person that's on the regular housing list, some of them are waiting 10 years.
Yeah.
So I presume that these people are going to be below them on the list. Surely they're not getting priority.
You would like to think.
You would like to think that. Well, they wouldn't have the housing need. Like the person that's been on the list for 10 years that genuinely has a housing need might have a child with a disability, etc. I would hope that those, you know, IPAS asylum seekers would go to the bottom of the housing list if that's what they want to do.
Well, particularly if they're single males who are usually on the bottom of the list. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, stay there a second. Let me go to Norman as well. Norman, hi. How are you?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can, Norman, yeah. You've heard Jessica and Alva there. They're saying this is not the solution either.
No, no, Niall, I'm very pro-immigrant, you know, but you have to be realistic. You have to see what can you deal with, how many can you take. And I've never seen any figures. You know, are we talking about 5,000, 500, 50,000, you know?
Yeah, well, there doesn't seem to be a limit on numbers.
But you have to think of numbers. You have to take the EU, we can take in 5,000, or we can take in 10,000, or 500, I don't know. But you have to see in which accommodation you have. You can't stick 5,000 people into a three-bedroom flat.
Your phone is just a little bit, I don't know, Norman, where you are at the moment, but it's difficult to kind of understand what you're saying. But anyway, but the point is, many people said this at the start, even when Ukrainians were coming into Ireland, that there should be a cap on numbers because obviously we're in the middle of a housing crisis. But that was never going to happen because, of course, you're dealing with a government who think, you know, the world is full of rainbows and magic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But you have to have a cap.
But they don't. You know what I mean? But you keep saying that to me. That's the third time you said to me, they're not going to put a cap on it. They were asked that a million times, and they said there'd be no cap.
Yeah, but Denmark has a cap. Denmark took in 30,000 Ukrainians. They said that's it, not taking any more.
Yeah, I know, but we didn't. We didn't, and that's not going to happen.
But
and
why?
We took 110,000 Ukrainians, and the numbers I don't believe as many Ukrainians are coming now, but you know what's happening is they're still coming in, but not as many. There's no cap. Yeah. And there's no, the bigger problem now is people seeking international protection. And there's no cap on those numbers either. And those numbers have doubled since last year.
Yeah. So we're going around in circles. We're going around in circles. So unless you put a cap in, you're going to have these problems. Okay. You know where to put them. And you're not asking the people where you put them in. It's okay. You know, if you put them in the place where there's no housing, you can't rent a house. There's no GP.
Well, look, they're going to put, I don't know how many people they're putting into Thornton Hall. They said 1,000, but some people have suggested it could be 3,000, right? I don't know. And there's no GP in the area. there's no shops in the area. There's nothing. No. So they'll have to keep bussing them to local towns like Finglas, Swords, Ashburn, whatever. I don't know. You know? Same.
But if you look at it from both sides, the residents, are not happy to have been there because of those facilities, and the people you're putting there won't be happy either. There's nothing there for them.
Well, why wouldn't the people you're putting there not be happy? Because should they just want to come here for a better life, they'd be happy to stay anywhere, I'm assuming, as long as they're not being sent home. But mind you, ultimately, as I heard, the two guys who sounded like, well, they actually were from Birmingham, although originally from Pakistan, who claimed they were asylum seekers, which they're not asylum seekers, they said they wanted a house. So don't we all?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. But there's no point in sending the EU if goodbye the EU, like we always do, taking in these people. They'll have nowhere facility for them.
Unfortunately, Norman, it's difficult to hear your line. Norman, thank you very much indeed for that. Alva, you know, I mean, when you listen to some of the interviews of these guys, they interviewed a couple of guys on the canal, two lads, they were from Pakistan. Mind you, they didn't have Pakistani accents. They had British accents. And one of them said they couldn't go back to Birmingham because it wasn't safe there with knife crime. You know, I mean, so they're trying to claim they're asylum seekers from Birmingham.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand. Like, if putting it like that, they're obviously illegal. They shouldn't be here at all. And the rest of us have to always abide by the law. So I don't know how these guys are just... I mean, they're giving a golden ticket for everything, even though they've broken the law getting here.
Stay there for a second. Let me go to Jason as well. Yeah. Jason, hi. How are you?
Good afternoon, man. How are you?
Good. Jason, well, is it... I mean, that's not too far from where you live, by the way.
No.
So, Thornton Hall, but nobody really lives locally as such. There's a few houses, not very many. So the government are kind of saying, what are you moaning about now?
You know, I just said, look at Dundrum. Small little village, little rural village.
I know, I can understand that. Yeah, I understand that.
Population's being doubled and there's nothing around there. But look what the government said, Niall. If these new areas with these new, and let's use the word international protection, because it's a good word. It's an awful lot better than economic migrant or refugee. But they said they'd put a doctor in and they'd put more this in and that, but yet they wouldn't do it for us.
They're going to put a doctor into Thornton Hall?
Yeah, they what I heard one of the interviews on, and... one of the questions was, what about like no doctors? And I think it was O'Gorman said, if the, for all the consultation they're going to be doing, if it's a new GP is needed, we'll give you a new GP.
Oh, I heard him say that was about Coolock. Yeah, yeah, I heard him saying that.
But then why in the last 20 years have they not done that for the Irish people?
Mm.
As I said, no, it's really easy to spend somebody else's money. They're not bothered about it. I mean, we have a Taoiseach there that's trying to grow into his confirmation suit, for Jesus' sake. I mean, he's the most powerful man in the country. He's never been elected. He's never had a job. He's never finished college. He was a tea boy for them. He just warmed his way around Leinster House till he's warmed his way to the top. Nobody else wanted that job because of what's coming in the next election.
But you seem very sure about that. And I'm going to tell you now, based on my experience, I don't think much will change in the next election.
I've told you this, Niall. I've been telling you this for 5 years, Niall. They will warm away in themselves between them, Fine Gael. And I mean, all we have
Do you think Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael will not be in power in the next election? Of course they will.
No, but one of them will be.
Because the gobshites the gobshites will still go out and vote for them.
Oh, yeah, but because, Niall, I've always said it to you. The only people that go out and vote are the people that vote for them. People in working class areas, for some strange bloody reason, will come on here all day long, will go on Facebook, go on every social media they can, and bitch and moan about the government, and blah, 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 and come voting day. They won't get off their arses and go out and vote.
But here's another thing. In the local elections recently, right, yeah, there was a few individuals that got in that did a lot of shouting, I'm going to do something about it, I'm going to raise this issue, I'm going to be a loud voice, blah, blah, blah. I haven't heard a word out of them.
Where are they now?
Yeah, where
Where's
are they?
This new party?
Yeah, they got their job.
Where's this new party that swore they'd stand up for us, and as soon as they get in, they signed the pact with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil over there?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, they're scratching each other's backs. They really don't care. That's a money train in there, and look at how they look after.
You're talking about Ciara Mullooly, obviously, in Independent Ireland.
I'm talking about a lot of them, Niall. Yeah. They're all at it. Every single one of them. Their promises, as you said. Look at one of them, I think, I was watching something last night, and he voted something like 7 times, or he asked questions 7 times. He clocked in just enough so that he could claim all his expenses. He got his ministerial 80 grand. He managed to claim his 99,000 in expenses. And now he's in Europe getting another job, and he steps down and so one of his buddies can come in. They look after each other, Niall. They don't care. The guards have sold us out as well. What I'm seeing coming out of the guards in this country is an utter disgrace. They're not standing with the people they're meant to protect. They seem to be protecting these people more than they're protecting their own. I hate to see what's coming down. And Niall, you can see what's coming down. They're going to start demanding they want this, that and the other now. And what are our government going to do? They're going to give them to them. They're going to magically find this 100,000 houses we need for all these new people, but yet they couldn't find a house for an Irish person.
Yeah, it blows my mind that we can suddenly go to all this trouble for accommodation. Yeah, we had a housing crisis long before the last 3 years. And we couldn't, you know, like, say, for example, we built modular homes for Ukrainian people. No, don't get me wrong, they're not mansions, but they're nice little modular homes. We built them for Ukraine. We couldn't do that 3 years previously when we had, you know, 14,000 people or 12,000 people on the, you know, on the homeless list here in Ireland. So it blows my mind that we couldn't do all of this before. We can suddenly spend 4.2 billion last year on refugees and asylum seekers, but we couldn't spend that money previously when we had Irish people who were homeless at the time. Or we had Irish people, 80,000 on the waiting list for housing. So, I mean, it just blows my mind that we couldn't do that then. I don't know why we can suddenly do it now.
Because I told you, it's not our money now. We haven't got money for new teachers. We haven't got money for new doctors. That's all we've been hearing for the last 10 years. And all of a sudden now, we've new school places. I want to know how many Irish kids are being left out of local schools to accommodate Ukrainian kids. Because I did hear somewhere along the line that certain amount of spaces are being held back. And they're being held back for Ukrainian kids, not Irish kids. I mean, and it's not going to affect Dublin much because there's a lot of schools. But when you're out in the country, you know, especially somewhere like where we live, we've limited resources already. Like, limited. You know, and already...
And how far are you from Thornton Hall?
I wouldn't know now in the distance, but I'd say...
15 minutes.
It wouldn't. Our bigger problem is the one in Mullingar, and we have one right in our village. They took over our only hotel in our village. 4 families, I told you this before. 2 years ago, it was all Ukrainian families, and we welcomed them in with open arms. And then in the middle of one day, when everybody was out walking, all the men and all the women were out walking, busloads came up, families disappeared out of our villages, kids disappeared out of our schools, and now all we have on that is men. 90% men. There's a couple of older Ukrainians that seem to be there, and I don't know why, but it seems to be all men, and we're told we have to shut our mouths. Anything that goes on in our village or the Mullingar doesn't seem to make it into the papers. But we have a lot of incidents, a lot of incidents.
I did see that they retrofitted Mullingar barracks, the old barracks in Mullingar,
yeah.
And they have...
Yeah.
housing there or cabins in it or whatever it is.
Yeah, push
modular homes, yeah. Yeah.
They're bringing guards in from other areas to do the dirty work, so the local guards don't have to do it, because then they'll have their guard a day with all, and we great, and they bring the horses down, and they bring the bikes and the vans and the flashy lights and the public order, and it's, oh, this is great, and it's a real family day, and then they bring in the Stasi then to push their way through the people. So they won't use the local lads, because the local lads have to live there, and they have to, their kids have to go to the local community, and but you can see it changing. You can really see it changing in little villages. Dublin, it doesn't really, you don't notice it up in Dublin, Niall, because it's such a big population. But there's 2,000 people in our village, right? That's the size of our village. And there's an extra couple of hundred men just after being dropped in it.
Mm.
And we all go to work all week. You know what I do for a living. I'm not at home. And when you see what's going on out in England, random stabbings, there's just a lot of random stabbings. I mean, the talk in airport when I'm out at the weekend with the lads is, what are we going to do if something goes wrong? Our guard station closes every evening.
At 5 o'clock, because of course in parts of Ireland crime only happens just up to 5 o'clock.
Here's just a thought I have. Just a thought. And I want you to throw this out there for me. How many have we taken in, and how many have we got here to protect us if it goes wrong? I think our armed services are now being outnumbered by the amount of men that have came into this country, and I'd like to know the answer to that.
Alva, in your small village, did they increase the amount of services that you had to accommodate the extra population?
They've definitely accommodated them, but in very negative terms for the locals that were here. I'll give you an example personally that happened to me back in 2022 when the Ukrainians were here the first year. I had a baby in 21. I was ready to go back to work, and I called my local creche, and they told me, no, the Ukrainian kids are at the top of the list. There's a waiting list, you know, about a year, 18 months waiting list, but the Ukrainians are at the top of the list. So you're going to go to the bottom. Wow. And I thought, well, I couldn't go back to work. Actually, it turns out I just had to quit my job. I couldn't go back to work because there was no place there. And I was asking these questions around the village, and I was trying to find out where the Ukrainians were getting work, why they needed the childcare more than I did. And what I was told was that the creche had this thing where they needed to include the Ukrainians, something to do with social inclusion, that their kids needed to be in a creche. For social inclusion,
even though the parents weren't actually working,
they weren't working. They were just dropping them and going back to the hotel for the day. Now, I do understand
the logic behind that to some degree. Before,
I do.
If they're, particularly if they're going to be here long term for their kids, you know, to learn English and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
But I remember at the time having an argument with a manager. I was like, I don't understand this. I need to go back to work, and I really had to go back to work. And she just said to me, listen, you know, if I just handed you a place, it wouldn't be fair on the parents of the community. And I was just saying, well, I am a parent of the community and this isn't fair. So I then had to leave my job. And was I entitled to anything? No, I wasn't. So it's the unfairness like that. So they got the extra resources, but I didn't. I suffered.
And you've been paying tax here all your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, since you started work, obviously. But stay there. Yeah, John, hi, John, how are you?
Not sure, Mr. Bergman.
Okay, I'm just being the devil's advocate here, but because I'm taking a position of Roderick O'Gorman, and his answer to all of you lot, and that's the way he might refer to you, his answer would be, well, look, you didn't want them in the community, so we put them in the middle of nowhere, in a big reception centre. That's what we're kind of asking for, and now you're still giving out.
Well, the thing is, they shouldn't be here in the first place. You should apply for a work visa, right? I mean, at the moment, the Prime Minister of Australia has told people, when there's this thing about Sharia law and everything else, and people asserting themselves, and she told them that they can get the hell out of the country, basically, like, I mean, on certain terms, that they're not, if you don't want to be a boy by our laws, go back to where you came from, right? No, this character of government, right? You see, the problem is, there's only two ways the situation will be sorted out. That's total anarchy in the streets, right? Continuously.
Well, no one wants to see that. Yeah, no one wants to see that.
Or it'll be sorted out politically. And the only way it would be sorted out politically is if we had someone like Nigel Farage. Ireland is crying out for a modern-day version of Wolf Tone, Padraig Pearce, a leader, because every political party up there are a waste of space. The Shinners are useless. If the Shinners had a brain in their head, they'd be ahead of this thing straight away, and they'd probably get an overall majority come the next election. But they're just playing politics. They're just playing nicey-nicey.
Yeah, well, you know, and as well as I do, they're playing politics, right? So what they're trying to do is appease everybody. So they're trying to get as many votes as possible by appeasing, you know, the D4 heads and trying to half appease, you know, the working class areas at the same time. So that, you know, then it's not going to happen. Like, there's another senator, I don't know, I'm not going to mention who it is, right? But I thought he was great over the last year. He was doing a wonderful job, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, I see an article there yesterday given out, I'm not going to say what it was about, but I can see he's clearly now trying to appease the kind of D4, rat minds, rat gar people, which goes against completely what he kind of has said in the past, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that to me is just pure traitorism, because, like, I mean, you have to pick a side and you have to stand by that side.
But they don't. Like, you see politicians, I mean, you've seen it before the European elections. Simon Harris and Roderick O'Gorman and Helen McEntee were all out, oh, we're going to take this seriously, we're going to get tough on immigration, blah, 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 blah. Basically saying what I was saying on RTE at the time. They were saying the same things. But I said it to everybody at the time, they're not going to do it. And I knew they wouldn't do it. And they didn't.
And I tell you something, like, the girls are coming in, so, like, the girls are supposed to show equal respect to everybody. And on the girl door as well, is one word, is impartiality. In other words, you don't work for the government, like, you work for the people. You have to be impartial. There was a friend of mine spoke to a girl during the week, and they were talking about what was happening down in the different areas, you know, Newtown, Mount Kennedy, you know, and other areas like that. And he said, like, what was happening was wrong. And the guard agreed with him, but your man turned around to him, my friend, and he said, if you were asked to go up there, no. He said, no, and carry on like that. He says, you'll go, won't you? And the guard didn't say another word. Like, in other words, like, he'll go over. He said,
I'm only taking orders. Yeah, I'm only like, doing what, where did what I hear that before? Yeah.
What they've done in Dundrum the other day, as my one of my friends has done as well, one of the activists, like, and he was talking to a few of the locals. And as I said, I know they didn't use them, but the very fact that they were there, their presence, he said, imagine to do this to this community. He said, 165 people living here, bringing in 2.5 times the population. They even, not only did they bring the public guard unit, and there was over 100 guards there, right? 100, because he counted them. But he said, they also brought in the dog units. He said, that's what they thought of us now, and the Irish people. They brought the dogs on top of us.
Oh, somebody texted in, by the way, and said, Niall, I don't know why all of your listeners keep mentioning single males. You know what, Texter? I'll tell you why they keep mentioning single males, because here's the actual statistics. There's an average of 285 arrivals per day, right? Out of those, 42% are single males, 14% are females, 18% are couples, 23% are children, and 3% are lone parents. So if the vast majority are single males. So people are right to be using that term, single males, because the vast majority are single males.
I'll tell you something, I hope it won't happen, but the next fatality, you know, if it's committed by one of these characters, whether it be a child, whether it be a woman attacked or whatever, or like the two gay lads up in Sligo, if there's another fatality, right, there'd be no stopping what will break out.
And the other thing as well, by the way, the vast majority of people are coming from Jordan. Now, there's an argument that some of them may be coming from Palestine. They've gone from Palestine to Jordan. Nigeria, Somalia, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Afghanistan, Iran, Zimbabwe, Georgia, and other is up there high too. Most of those countries don't have a war. So most of them are economic migrants.
No, but what they're doing here, they're pushing the Irish civilian population into war. Because I guarantee you, like, this is not over by a long shot. Like, people are not going to accept this. Mm-hmm. They're not going to accept this.
Yeah, yeah. Look, Can I say it, Niall? Yeah, go ahead, Alva.
Can I just? Isn't it very? It's very like a modern day plantation of Ulster. If you think about it, if you go back in time, what was happening where the Irish people were just being wiped out. You know, they were the minority.
Well, the CSO did bring out statistics there 2 weeks ago for the population in 2057. And they said, based on the current scenario, our population will be nearly, I think it was 8 million, don't quote me on the exact figures, 8 million. And the vast majority of the new population, obviously, because we're only having 1.5 children now, the vast majority will be non-Irish. So it does look like if you carry that scenario on for, say, another 20 or 30 years, we will be the Irish indigenous, if you want to call them that, for a better word, will be a minority in their own country.
Isn't that just wild?
Well, see, here's the problem. Going forward, we have to do one of two things. we either import people or we encourage Irish people to have more children. Because we have a big problem in the fact that we're not replacing our own population, similar to many other countries in Europe, by the way. We need 2.3 children to replace the population.
But we're only having
1.5. Now, the answer to that, Alva, if I was in government, is to give you money for childcare costs. The answer to that, the answer to that is to support you, you know, and a support and support you and your partner to get an affordable house, not a 2-bedroom apartment. Yeah. You know, so you'll have a back garden, and you might then you can have 3 kids and 3 bedrooms. You know, so that's the answer, but the government won't do that.
I also remember you were saying a few years ago, I know you've spoken about this before, about the wage for the stay-at-home mother should also be a topic that's brought up to make a reality for Irish women or, you know, any nationality women to stay at home. And, you know, if they couldn't get a, you know, like in a small town like ours, that there isn't the childcare space there, that the woman isn't at home suffering without her own pay, I suppose, and relying on one income in the family. We would have more children if we could.
Yeah, Bertie Ahern was the one who suggested a payment for stay-at-home mothers going back in 2006, I think it was. Yeah. And I completely agree with it. You know, you don't have to pay them, you know, 2 grand a week or something like that. but a payment, I mean, look, they're increasing social welfare now up to 450, depending on what your job was previously, right? So, I mean, if, for example, a stay-at-home mom wants to stay home, you could put an age limit on it, say, for the first 7 years of a child's life, you know, which are the formative years of a child's life. I believe absolutely there should be an allowance made and there should be a payment made.
But like in my case, I didn't want to stay home, but I couldn't. I felt like I was being forced to stay at home because I had no childcare.
Yeah.
Now, I know that's different. Sometimes I do want to stay home and sometimes I don't. But in that specific time, I wanted to be at work. I couldn't hack being at home anymore. And I felt like I had absolutely no choice. Now, I had tried at the time to contact local TDs and I don't know, I think I got the idea that they were going to help me, but nobody did help me. Now, obviously, we're in better times now, but when I think about all of the help that other nationalities get, I just feel like, what is the point of fighting? Like, what is my fight worth? Or what is my family working so hard for when we get nothing in return? It's just so unfair.
Okay, hang on, let me go to Carl as well. Carl, hi, how are you?
How are you, Niall? How are you?
Yeah, instead of building large reception centres and spending over 4 billion on iPass centres and all that kind of stuff, you know, why aren't we helping people like Alva and young women and young couples, you know, to get housing and to have more children? You know, that's the real way we should be doing things. But anyway, and again, I'm not exactly. Nobody elected.
Right, but how many people on the housing list have been offered houses and they've torn them down because they're not in the area I grew up in or they're not near me families?
Mm.
Yeah, no, we've all heard that story.
Yeah.
You know, and then you go to like, oh, there's not enough places in school. That's grand. Okay, so if you produce more places for classrooms and schools, you have to produce more teachers. There's not enough teachers to look after the current numbers that we have at the moment. I was watching
but the point I'm making to Alva and what Alva is saying as well, that's not a 1-year plan. That's a 20-year plan. That's a 2-decade, a generational plan. You're not going to fix that overnight. But some of the suggestions Alva made and that I said about, you know, payments for stay-at-home parents and all those kind of things and making accommodation, say shared ownership for young couples, you know, to get a house for half the price it would normally be because nobody can afford to live in a house in Ireland anymore or to buy a house unless you're Rothschild. You know, so in other words, making it affordable for them to have more than 1.5 children. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, yeah, no, and I agree with you 100%. I mean, I lived in Holland for 8 years, and when we were getting our first house over there, we actually got a grant off the government, the Dutch government over there. I think it was about 12,000 guilders at the time, or in around that. Mm. But you have to pay it back over
your lifespan. They do schemes like that for people who are buying new houses, young couples buying new houses, but you have to have the money, some money in the first place. Anyway, back to what we're talking about, Thornton Hall. You know, I mean, look, the government are more or less saying to us now, well, yous are moaning about Coolock, yous are moaning about Newtown, Mount Kennedy and Dundrum. Here we are building a big reception centre in the middle of nowhere and you're still moaning.
Well, I drove up to Thornton Hall there this morning. It's only 10 minutes up the road from
I know where it is exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, there was 20 Garda standing there. There was one woman with a camera. There was 2 lads protesting across the road. And about 1.5 kilometres up the road to the left, there was 3 public order units waiting.
Waiting for what?
It was 2 lads with a flag across the road saying no. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, but there's no population. There is no population. Well, there's a, I don't know, 4 or 5 houses around it somewhere. And there's not much. But hold on. But Falima did say, the problem is, if you've got a couple of thousand people staying in Thornton Hall, let's say, right? And it could be that. They're saying 1,000 at the moment, but let's say it goes to a couple of thousand. You've got a couple of thousand people staying there. They're going to be bored. They need to go somewhere. They're going to be running buses in and out of Swords, in and out of Finglas, the nearest towns. You know, so it's not just Thornton Hall that's affected that area. They have to go in and out of local communities.
Oh yeah, the whole area will be affected. But if they're spending money, I mean, they're still paying. I mean, okay, they're going to get an allowance each week, whatever it might be, €38 a week. I mean, they're not in prison. They should be allowed to go into a shop, and if it's €38 or whatever it is, or food vouchers, whatever, they should be allowed in to go in and buy it. You know what I mean?
Well, I personally believe they shouldn't, but that's just my opinion. I believe if you arrive in this country and you've no documentation, and we've no idea who you are, and a lot of them have no documentation, 80% according to the Irish Times last year, I believe you should be kept there until we find out who you are.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that 100%. But for the 20% of people who have documentation and who are legitimate, they should be allowed to go into the city centre or into the local villages and spend whatever money they have. Why lock them up? Yeah. Why incarcerate them?
Genuine asylum seekers, which are few and far between, should be actually located somewhere else. They shouldn't be. Those reception centres should be for those that arrive with no identification and those who we know are not genuine until such a time as we can deport them. And we should be deporting them. We're not deporting them.
No, we're not, and that's wrong. We should be deporting them. I have a place down in Leitrim in Ballinamore, and they welcomed in a very small village down there. They welcomed in a couple of migrants or immigrants down there. And now all the immigrants have been told, you just have to get out and go. And the town are like, no, they can stay. They're part of the community now. They have to stay.
Mm.
You know, we've made them part of the community. They're going to the schools. Their children are knocking around with our children. They're growing up with them. They're learning, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, some small villages will accept them, where some villages will just say, no.
I think when there's a small amount of people and it's families, you know, there's kids and there's wives and husbands, and I think people can accept that if it's a small amount, you know, moving into their community. I think people generally embrace that. But the problem is that's not the case. Most villages, what they're seeing is 200 or 300 men just being dumped in.
Yeah, and that's totally wrong.
I mean, well, that's not going to work out. You know what I mean?
No, it's not. And you're only going to cause anarchy then in the end, you know. And
by their very nature, men tend to be more aggressive anyway. And then culturally, there's a different culture as well. And so, you know what I mean? Like, it is a recipe for disaster in a lot of places. I'm not saying everywhere.
It's going to kick off. But you have some of these people who got voted in as well. No, I'm not going to mention any names.
Yeah.
They're all
disappointing. The local elections. There was a load of them all over the country who were shouting and roaring and parroting and, oh, we should be doing something about immigration. Immigration is chaotic and I'm going to stand up and I'll be the voice and I'll be loud and I'll do this. I haven't heard nothing from them. Not a word, not a squeak out of them.
Yeah, but there's one of them being loud for the long bloody reasons. I'm not going to mention their name.
No.
You can probably have a guess who I'm talking about. But he's getting slated on every page around the area. Every page he's getting slated on because he said he's doing absolutely nothing. The first thing he done was went over to Turkey to get a hair transplant.
I know who you're talking about. Okay. But insane. Well, look, in fairness, he is a loud voice. At least he's making himself known. I'm not particularly talking about him. There are other ones around, you know what I mean, that are saying nothing. Who said they would, that they'd kind of come out of the woodwork and be a loud voice for the people. But they're doing nothing.
Well, I think the likes of, I don't want to mention his name.
Don't be mentioning names.
I'm not going to mention any names, and the guy was talking with the hair transplant.
Oh, yeah.
They're totally against women's rights. You know, they're really digging a hole for themselves.
Yeah, I don't know who you're talking about there, but anyway, but look, the point is, Carl, you know, I don't think we're getting anywhere. I don't think we've moved on. And here's the problem. The general election is on the way. Nothing will change.
Nothing will change because the same people and the same families will go out and they'll vote for the same parties over and over again. And it's the people who are doing all the mouthing, as your caller said earlier on, who'll do all the mouthing and giving out on social media, won't get up off their arses and go out and vote for someone new or someone different. You think everyone else is going to do it for them?
All right, thanks for that, Carl. Let me go to Maureen. Somebody has text senses. I think some people are entitled to get a hair transplant out if they want to. Absolutely. Maureen, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Good. Maureen, okay, so again, back to the original question. You know, it's in the middle of nowhere, so what's the problem?
Well, that's a very big problem. First of all, they shouldn't be here.
Well, many of them, all of them, some of them shouldn't be here, yeah. Many of them,
they shouldn't be here, and it seems that all our lovely buildings now are being taken over,
mm-hmm.
just to house these. And did I see where there's a big wall going up around it?
Yeah, big wall. It's like the Berlin Wall.
Yeah, that's like a garrison. Well, that's what I call a garrison.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, there's something very, very sinister about all this.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a video last night, and it was Saint Vladimir talking to he was some fella from BlackRock. Another one of the Rockefellers.
Right.
They're after pumping, I don't know how many million dollars now for him to go building houses in Ukraine. So the Ukrainians here now can head off back to Ukraine and he's building houses.
Yeah.
So, but eventually, now you see, what's going to happen is they're going to start moving them out into every area. The whole country will be overrun because there's not enough room for them up around in the near cities, even where I am here, West Cork, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
They're eventually going to spread out here. And I had a very good story for you. There was this guy, right? He was from Afghanistan. He was here for 8 years. He had no passport or anything when he arrived, okay? But he had got a job and he got residency. Well, miraculously, didn't his passport turn up? And it was taken to the passport office and it was stamped or updated. Because the nearest embassy, he is in London. So there you go.
But my
theory is that somebody is holding their documents because these guys are traveling across Europe. They can go across the border and get on a flight from Belfast back to the UK. So somebody is holding them. They're not all flushing them down any toilet. I never believed that from day one.
I'm sorry, I'm just looking here. I don't know whether people can see that graph, right? You can see the line going up. Oh, there you go. Sorry, on the other side. You can see the line. So it starts off in 2017. And Roderick O'Gorman and many others were giving out back in 2017 saying 5,500 people in direct provision was crazy. Crazy. Now, look at the graph, right? So that's 2000, and then we get to 2022, and all of a sudden, up it goes, right? And we're now up to 31,000 people are basically being accommodated in what would have been called direct provision in those days. So we've gone from whining about 5,000 people saying this is wrong, we shouldn't be bringing that many people in, we shouldn't be allowing 5,000 people to be in direct provision. We've now got 31,000, six times that amount. And yet they seem to think it's acceptable.
Yes, I know. Mm-hmm. And it isn't acceptable.
Yep.
And all I know is now I heard three people on there talking about voting and, you know, how people go and they vote for the same ones. All I know is that we're not voting our way out of this. We can forget that. That won't be happening.
Okay, by nationality, the most popular countries are Nigeria, Georgia, Algeria, and Somalia. No wars in those countries.
Yeah, and on top of that, they're coming in here. What diseases are they bringing in with them? Well, there's never a swab done on them. There's never probably a blood test on them. Never dental checks for their age.
I'm glad you raised that point, by the way, because, as you know, the day before yesterday, Africa was, by the WHO, was declared an emergency in relation to the monkeypox.
I heard it last night. I was listening to Tedros.
Now Tedros is saying the world, they're declaring a global emergency. The day before it was only Africa. Now it's a global emergency in relation to the monkeypox. So why aren't we now saying anybody coming in from those countries, particularly the African continent, where there's an emergency, why are we allowing people to come in from a country where seemingly there's a very infectious disease called the monkeypox?
Well, because the NGOs and all the human rights groups will kick up. They will be against their human rights. You'll be demonising them.
It's like what Donald Trump said during his last presidency when COVID started first. And obviously the problem was in China originally. China, as he called it. And he said, we're stopping all flights and all people coming from China into America. And he was right.
Yeah.
He was right. Of course he was, because that's where it was coming from.
But so, apparently it is ripe in the Democratic Republic of Congo. But wait a minute, who's going to mine the lithium batteries for the electric cars? I mean, what children are going to go down the mines? But there's no talk about that from any of these human rights groups. I mean, where's Amnesty International and all this? All they're worried about is something that's going on in some far-flung corner of the world. But you notice it makes me sick to my stomach I just feel so sorry and heartbroken for the people that are suffering.
Well, by the way,
the country.
This year so far, 530 people have come in from the Democratic Republic of Congo. So I'm wondering now, going forward, will we be stopping people from the Democratic Republic of Congo? Seems monkeypox is so rife.
Yeah, that's why I brought over about the disease, now, because look, we've eradicated a lot of diseases in the West, right? But they're all going to come back again, because these are bringing, they're going to bring it in with them. You can't say they're not, because they will be.
Okay, let me go to Eric as well. Eric, hi, how are you?
No, a long time no talk. How are you doing, pal?
Nice to talk to you, Eric. And sorry for keeping you so long. I do apologise. And sorry, Morris and Dave, yeah, and Wilbur, just a second. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, for me, like, I suppose, I mean, the question is about, like, you know, is it right that they're now intending to move a lot of the people being housed in the migrant centres into a larger complex out in the middle of nowhere? It's just sweeping the problem under the rug. And if anything, I think it will make it worse. And I think if we look at a case study like City West, if you're going to put a bunch of majority males into a centre, it's basically an open-air prison, is it not? And what happens in the prison? They all turn into gangs. You know, you have your, in America, the Aryan Brotherhood versus the Latinos versus the black gangs. And that's what happened in City West. You had the Somalis versus the Georgians. A couple of people got stabbed.
That's right.
It would be no different if they decided to move that into a larger complex out in the middle of nowhere.
You're mixing a load of cultures together, yeah, in small groups.
That don't mix.
Yeah.
That don't mix, you know. And someone made a comment about the plantations of Scotch people in the north earlier on and the Irish being replaced. You know, I'd even accept that now, because at least there's some shared values between the Irish and the Scotch. You know, there's not a lot of shared values between us, Somalians, Georgians, other maybe than Christian beliefs. The majority of that is not going to bring us together as a society. You know, for me, I look back in history and I look at, say, for example, the Marielle boat lift, which happened in the 80s, where a bunch of people from Cuba fled Cuba to join their relatives in the United States, or were kicked out of Cuba by Fidel Castro. And they housed people. You remember the movie Scarface? At the start of that, they're all housed basically under a bridge in these shanty towns. And it was warfare, because they're all housed in with nothing to do. And then they have to wait to get their green card. That's going to be the same situation if we decide to go with these larger centres, because you're going to have nothing for these guys to do. I know some people do get involved with local initiatives in the community and stuff like that, cleaning up trash, helping with the garden, whatever it may be. But the problem is, as well, for those people that are genuine, that are willing to partake in those types of activities, the locals are hostile to them. And you can't really blame the locals for being hostile either, because they're not being kept informed on what's going on. And as someone said earlier on, you know, if you're, you know, filling a village, like, for example, this Dundrum village in Tipperary, with more than the people in the town, you know, 200 people versus 100 and whatever it was people in that town.
Well, it's even worse than that. It's worse than that now, even again. They've already moved in 280 into a town of 200, right? But the plan is to expand that to 550. So there will be double the amount of, you know, IPAS
outnumbered. Yeah.
Than there is the population. You know what I mean? That just wipes out the whole culture of the town.
100%. And as everyone knows, like, even, you know, I'm sure now you've been around the country driving around on a drive. If they even hear a Dublin accent, they know you're not from there. And,
you're a blow-in.
A blow-in, a jack-in. How's it going to feel when someone with no ties to this land, and God knows what they're fleeing, God knows what trauma they've been through, if they're a genuine case, what's it going to do when you dump them in the middle of a predominantly white Christian culture? It's going to end up with a situation like we're seeing all over the UK. You know, you're going to have these people feeling unpersoned, not part of the society. And what will they do? They'll act out, because they're probably going to have mental health issues, you know? Again, that's probably just an assumption of mine, but it's not going to end well. And at the end of the day,
in a small town, you've also got a disproportionate amount of men. And we have to be fair, and I have to be honest, men are more aggressive than women, clearly, from a violence point of view. So when you have when you have all that testosterone and you know, a disproportionate amount of men, it is guaranteed to have a problem, or to cause a problem.
100%. 100%. And not only that, idle hands are the devil's work, so to speak. You know, I don't live too far away from town, let's say, and they just opened up the canal again, the Royal Canal. They've done this new bike path. that are wasting money by the Green Party and those people.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's opened up. There was a fella there. I said it when it opened, there's going to be a bunch of people here with tents just like the Grand Canal. There was one fella there for about 2 weeks that set up with, he had five wheelie bins, he had a tent, he had a table, he had a bleeding trolley, he had all the stuff there. And there was a few other people dotted around the canal as well. And it already, you can see this nice new development that they've done. Already you can see the look has been taken off. Now that fella was subsequently moved on, but I'm sure there's going to be more people popping up there. But not even that. You see these random people just sitting around drinking all day. You know, I'll give you an example. I don't know if you've been around Frederick Street. There's like this Somali Ethiopian cafe. And all those fellas just sit around there all day drinking coffee, doing whatever. I suppose they're not harming anyone, but they're all huddled together. Then you'll go on the canal and you'll find a bunch of the same people just sitting around drinking all day.
Yeah.
Once or twice a week. And why? Because they've nothing else to do. You know, like, I don't know what it is. Like, I've heard that it's easy enough for some people coming here as an international protection applicant to actually get work. They get given a work permit a lot faster than expected. But that's what I've heard. I don't know. Again, it's all hearsay. But there's jobs, but they don't seem to be taking them. And why would they? Because the benefits that they're probably getting from this government, from Roderick O'Gorman's Department of Integration, it's probably not worth them going.
Well, we've seen that with Ukrainians as well. Like, there's over 105,000 or 10,000 Ukrainians in Ireland already. And they have a really low rate of employment. I think it's only like 30%. Now, I know a lot of them would be kids, that 110,000. A lot of them would be senior citizens as well. But they have a really low rate of employment. Now, I don't know whether that's because they're hoping they're going to be going back soon, so there's no point taking a job, or whether it's just not financially viable, because if they do take a job, they lose the benefits they get. Maybe. I don't know whether they do lose the benefits they get. So it is a big problem.
Yeah, well, it's like Irish people. You know, how many Irish people do you know that they don't go and work because they lose a lot of the protections that they get from being on the welfare? You know, like, I know many people like that. People in my family are like that. Friends, people, even you can assume about people and you know it. You know that
They're scamming the system. Yeah. Well, look, there's it we can do about the Irish scamming the system.
You can call them scammers, but like at the same time, it's like, why wouldn't you? You know, if you either are put in a position where it's more beneficial financially for you, or it's just there's no other option, why wouldn't you do it? You can't really.
No, I know. It's the kind of social welfare trap, isn't it? Really? Yeah, I know. I get
100%, and that's evident in the United States, and it's evident here, and it's evident in the UK. This is the type of long-term impact that it has. It makes people not want to work because, again, they come off the booby of the government. You know.
Stay there for a second. Let me just go to Morris as well. Morris, hi. How are you?
Niall, how are you doing? It's very difficult, I suppose, when you get to my age, when you see what's happening in the country, and basically everything that we talked about before, it's turning people, working-class people against working-class people. And the oil is off the government. Now, there's nothing about the two men that drowned, the two Irish homeless men that drowned down in the canal, who were surrounded by people who were here illegally. All I see is a memorial down there. I drive down that way, and I see flowers, and I see a chair and cigarettes, right? Them men are gone. They're statistics. There's no word in the media of the 14,000 homeless people here that haven't got a home. They're in emergency accommodation, but they haven't got a home. But still, every time I see videos and footage of people that shouldn't be here or are here illegally, what is the reason for them hiding their faces when they're being videotaped? I wouldn't be hiding my face if I had nothing to hide. Mm. If I was here genuinely, I'd be coming out and embracing the Irish culture and the Irish people. This country is being taken over. You know, I'm being an ex-army man. I'm looking at the future of this country, and you're seeing the government distracting everybody and having us all fighting against each other. Now, you talked about the European elections. None of them got voted in. They got in through transfers.
Mm.
Not one of them genuinely got through on a vote and said, I topped the poll. Every one of them got through on transfers. When would you ever think you'd see a Labour TD getting votes off somebody that failed to get through? That's the Green Party. Imagine that. And they hate each other because...
It was because of that reason I didn't get a seat, by the way. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I would have got the fourth seat only for A on a radio got 15,000 votes from the Green Party. Yeah.
Exactly. So they conspired to get rid of you. Okay.
Well, but the only thing I'll be happy about is the thing I did achieve is I kept the Green Party out of Europe. So I'm happy about that.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that was great. But the only thing was we got even a worse gobshite over there than the Green Party and Aidan.
Yeah, I haven't heard from him. I haven't heard from him since he went. Yeah, he's gone.
Well, I've seen his campaign, Niall, for the love of Dublin, vote for me. You know, what a gobshite. He was rejected. He got through in the last general election on the 14th count. But anyway, getting back to the point, men coming to this country of a fighting age from an Islamic background, regardless of where they're from in the world, and they have no papers, should be verified, fingerprinted, find out who they are. And Taunton Hall is a good idea to me now because it's right beside the airport, on a plane, back to wherever they came from. And I mean to say, we seriously have to look at the open borders we have with the UK because they don't give a shit about this country.
Yeah, but you keep saying, I mean, if you go back to June before the local and European elections, there was a statement put out by Helen McEntee saying she was looking to charter if anybody wants to put in a tender for, you know, the flights to deport people. Nothing has happened about that since. Nothing. Because that was just electioneering. That's all it was. They have no intention they've no intention of removing people from the country. It's not going to happen.
And Niall, do you know one story that's at the break, and I'm not going to mention any names, so don't panic, right? I won't mention any names or companies, but a story has broken in the last couple of days of the hotel in Dundrum and who the owners are.
Yeah,
horrific. I couldn't believe it.
Don't mention the names because I'll tell you why, because they've denied it.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, the ditch don't come out with information unless it's substance or trying, you know.
Yeah, I think it was in Gripped as well. It was in a couple of the outlets there, put it up.
Well,
there.
I'm just saying to you know, it's amazing the way people are torn for the price of a dollar.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying to you, or the price of a euro. So anyway, let's see what functions there that comes out, you know, and people will be shocked. Once there's an allegation made and it doesn't stick, but let me just say, some companies, as you know, have front companies. And they put out the front company, but they're behind in the background pulling the strings.
Oh, look, again, there's no doubt. Look, immigration is worth more. The immigration trade in Europe now is worth more than the drug trade. In other words, people who are accommodating, feeding, educating, giving healthcare to, transportation, you know, all the money that's being made currently. Like, as I said, in this country alone, 4.2 billion last year. We spent on accommodation on refugees in this country and other expenses. 4.2 billion.
I'm going to give your listeners one example, Niall, of when integration of people from a tough area came in. When the Vietnamese Bo people came in here, they were welcomed with open arms. They integrated into the community. They mingled into the community. They're out there. They're thriving. They have businesses and they're contributing to the country and the community. That's the only people I know who've done that. Anybody else that comes in sets up a ghetto and stays on their own. And we don't want to be Irish. But there's one thing that I'll say to you about the people that are causing the most trouble in the world. And that would be Israel and the Muslim states. What's one thing they have in common?
Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed for that, Morris. Let me just go to Dave. Dave, hi, how are you?
What's the crack?
How you doing, Dave? You've been listening to Eric there before. I spoke to Morris, you know, about what he was saying. But in relation to Thornton Hall, you know, again, I'm going to put the argument across that the government will put across. Okay, it's not a small centre. It's a big reception centre. Hopefully they're going to move people from other smaller centres into the bigger one. And so what's the problem? It's in the middle of nowhere. You can't be given out about it now.
Yeah, but you know, I don't necessarily disagree with using a big place out in the middle of nowhere like that. I think the problem is our immigration process. It's not the fact that there's going to be people in there. Like, I don't really have too much of an issue with that. It's the length of time that they're going to be there. Like, I mean, was it something like 3 to 7 years for an asylum process to be application to be processed? And then you can launch an appeal after an appeal after an appeal. Like,
and then eventually, by the way, nobody gets sent on, because eventually if you get refused on your 7th or 8th appeal or whatever, or high court appeal, right, whatever it is, right, by the way, all on the taxpayers' money, if you get refused again before they deport you, they can give you a deportation order. You can then apply to the Minister for Justice for permission to remain on the fact that you've been here for so long that you've made a life in this country, and they'll give it to you. That's what happens.
See, therein lies the issue. If it was a more streamlined process, I don't think we would have as much trouble or as much of a backlog or as many people just languishing in hotels and places around the country.
Yeah, according to the EU Migration Pact, we're going to speed up this whole process. But I don't believe that's going to happen. And I know Michael McDougall spoke about this recently, that you cannot speed up the process because we're incapable of speeding up the process at the moment with the amount of staff we have.
But it's going to pay lip service and say, oh, we're going to speed up the process. Okay, how? What are you going to do? What is it about it that takes us so long? Is it trying to find out who the person is, where they come from, what maybe some of their past transgressions may have been? What exactly makes it so slow? I mean, is it just we have enough civil servants that just, unfortunately, it's a bloated bureaucracy, and we all know how bureaucracy works.
But I don't know why they can't do what, say, they did in COVID. I mean, we could set up centres overnight to vaccinate thousands of people. We could set up centres overnight to do track and trace with hundreds of people within the civil service working in those. We move them all over to work in those. This is an emergency. This is a problem. Why can't we suddenly just move over 700 or 800 staff from the Department of Other, something else, I don't know, over to the Department of Integration and get them all a computer and say, right, sit there and work on that one lad for the next 2 hours and find out who the fuck he is.
Because the drive isn't there. Because it isn't an inconvenience to Roger Gorman or Helen McEntee or Simon Harris. It's not on their doorstep. They're not the ones. Dundrum is a fine example. The fabulous hotel. Now, the reason the hotel closed down is because the guy runs a fucking gobshite and he doesn't know. I wouldn't
trust. Okay, yeah, I get the point. You don't like him. Go on, okay.
But the thing is, though, you still had a lovely bar restaurant there. You still had the gym there. The golf course was there. That's all gone now. They're all gone. They're all being closed down. Now, again, I think these are rumors, but apparently some of the staff are being let go because they're not Garda vetted. I'm not 100% sure how true that is because yourself, you hear 10 different rumors and blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, it's a local amenity that is now gone. And for people who say, well, your locals don't stay in the hotel, correct, they don't. But you have people coming in from America, England, wherever, staying in the hotel, pumping money into the local economy for tourism. You also had the places used for fun. Nearly every Christmas that a friend of mine has been had over there. They used to do stuff at Christmas time for all the kids. You'd have, confirmations, communions, afters of weddings and stuff over there. That's all gone. That's a massive knock to the local economy. But not even that as well. The local GP in Dundrum, that man can be there till 7 or 8 o'clock some nights because he has so many patients. He can't take on any more patients. He can't. The poor guy, he's close to retirement as well. So when he goes, we don't have anybody to replace him. And not even that as well. But if they are bringing in, kids and families and stuff, where are they going to school them? All the schools around here are full. For me to get my young fellow, we guaranteed that he had a place in school. We had to register him with the school the month he was born. And all those places, I think, are pretty much full up now. But creche, you're talking 12-month wait, minimum, even if they can give you that. Do you know, the reason people are pissed off is because the resources aren't there. And another one for you as well. The Department of Integration, they're promising this, that and the other for when people move in. There was public consultation, and when local councillors and TDs and people in the locality asked, right, what extra resources are the Department of Integration going to give us when you move all these people in? They said, that's not our job. Our job isn't to give you the extra resources. You have to go to this other department and this other department. It's literally the left hand does not know what the right hand is.
I know it's not far from where you are, Dave. I know you live in that general direction somewhere.
That's Michelle's originally from Dundrum. I pass through Dundrum every day. I spend the majority of my late teens and 20s in Dundrum. It's a lovely little village. And it really fucking annoys me when I hear people trying to make out that everybody else there is a racist.
Did you hear the story that now, initially there was to be 280 people moved in? But they're saying there's a possibility that the Department of Integration that it will be more likely 550 over time. Now, I don't know how true that is.
I haven't heard that.
That's 2.5 times the population of the town.
Yeah, no, it is, yeah. And it's a small little village where there's literally nothing for them to do. There isn't. There's one or two forestry walks. Anybody who lives around here, you have to have a car if you want to go to work. So it's not like there's a chance for employment in the locality because there are no jobs locally. Everybody who lives here either works in, Cashel or Limerick or Tip, or they work somewhere far off. All the local jobs, local people have them.
But it's not nice for the locals to be minority in their own village. And that's what's
going on. No, and as well as that, because when the Ukrainian people moved in, the locals welcomed them in with open arms. They try to integrate well. But at the same time, there has also been problems with people who were there. There was a guy murdered there I was either earlier this year or last year. Do you know? I don't know, but it is. It's just, it's a, like, it is. It's a crying shame. You're after seeing the entire demographic of a small little village change overnight. And like one of your callers said earlier on about, you know, if they hear a Dublin accent, I am, you know, that's all.
You're a blow-in, yeah, yeah. That's what Eric said, you're a blow-in.
I am a blow-in. And there is a fair amount of kind of having to pay your dues. But there are also, like, a lot of expat dubs who live down around here. And all of them say to you, the reason that they love living around here is because, well, first of all, it's not Dublin. And second of all, it's quiet. It's peaceful. It's nice. You know what I mean? And
not anymore, it's not.
Everybody's... But, huh?
Not anymore, it won't be.
Well, look, hopefully not. But again, but even saying that, like I was saying to you tonight, Cashel and Tipperary being the nearest towns, right? They don't have enough guards to sort out the problems we have here, right? So I'm not saying there is going to be trouble, but if there is trouble, where are these guards going to come from?
Okay, well, do me a favor, stay there for a second. Let me go to Lorenzo. Lorenzo, hi, how are you doing?
Hi, Niall. All good, how are you?
I'm good, Lorenzo. Lorenzo, you know, this seems to be huge. This problem is getting bigger and bigger, although the government seems to think they're being clever now by building a bigger reception centre. And can I point out as well, you know, when I said to Dave about, you know, suddenly during COVID we could find staff. For example, in China, in I think it was whatever it was, 20 days, they built a huge hospital in COVID-19. So it is possible to build large buildings capable of looking after people in a very short amount of time, but it's just seemingly not in Ireland. Anyway, you know, larger reception centres, is that a better idea?
I don't think so. They're doing the same more or less in Italy, and we only have problems. And even because it's totally the opposite of what they want to achieve. Because if you want to achieve integration, why are you putting people away from the people you want to integrate with? It makes no sense.
Mm.
You know.
We don't know if they're going to integrate them yet, because we don't know if they should be allowed to stay, because they're only making an application. I think you can only integrate people once you know they're going to be staying.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the problem is the same in Italy, in terms of there are people coming in, you have no idea who they are. They put them in facilities, in camps, hotels. They are talking about with the decrease of the military and with the number of barracks that are not used to use the barracks as well. But still, you're going to create basically a steam pot that is going to explode. Because people don't want to stay there because the conditions in those centers are not humane. So they have nothing. They're basically for, it's more or less the same of Gaza in terms of a prison, because they can't move away from there. And if they move, you lose them. So it makes no sense to build those type of centers. Mm. And that is it's an effect, I think, that comes from multiple sources in terms of the political class that decrease standard, and we allowed them to decrease standard because we still go voting for them. So why should they go back on the same standard that they have?
And I've said that too, that we still go voting for them. But here's the problem. There is nobody else to really vote for. You know what I mean? I mean, you look at every political party in this country, every main political party in this country, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, the Labour, Sinn Féin, Greens, Social Democrats, People for Profit, they're all the same. They all agree with this. Exactly. They all agree with this idea of bringing in people. They all agree with it.
Yeah, but then I think that in the same, I presume that here the president is the same, has the same kind of duty than the Italian president, in terms of he has to be the one to kind of ensure Irish population that the Irish constitution is followed, I presume. I
mean, yeah, but he has no power. He has no power, Lorenzo.
Exactly. He has no power. The only power he has, I presume, again, comparing Italy and here, is that he can build up a technical government if there is no majority. So that's the only thing that Irish people can do. Do not vote. And by saying that, I'm not saying don't go to vote. I'm saying if it's possible, because again, I don't know the Irish constitution, but in Italy, you can go to vote and say, I don't want to vote.
Well, you can spoil your vote. Well, you can spoil your vote, yeah.
Now, it's not spoiling in terms of, it's not giving out, going in the booth and make four or five crosses or write Niall Boylan's great or
you can do that too. Like you can do that if you want to. Yeah.
That will be void, so that will be deleted or leaving blank it, because that means you're still voting and making a thing. What I mean is, for example, what I did the last election in Italy was I went to the polling station, I gave my document. When they gave me my card, I said, with my hand in my pocket, I renounce my right to vote. So I did my duty in terms of I went to vote.
You turned up.
I said, no, I don't want to vote. I want to renounce my right because nobody...
And by the... Okay, so... And then in Italy, do they give the results when they're giving out the results of the election? Do they tell you how many people renounce their right to vote?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
So, but for example, the last election... there was 48% of people voting. So less than half of people voted in Italy for the reason of, why should I vote? Nothing changed.
Well, maybe it would be a good idea on the polling sheet to have at the bottom, when you have all the names where you tick the boxes or put your numbers or whatever it is, they should have at the bottom none of the above that you could tick. You know what I mean? So
possibly.
Maybe that would be a good idea.
It should. Now, the problem is that even the problem in Italy is that if you leave blanket or you void your vote, that vote will still be counted in the majority.
So okay, well, that doesn't happen here. If they're spoiled here, they just disappear and that's the end of it.
Okay, so that's, for example, is the difference. So what can be done is this, go and void it. Then at the end, when they will see that, I don't know, 60, 70% of Irish went vote, but only, I don't know, 40% voted and then the other 30 didn't. That's a big message for the president, for the class in general.
I was at the count centre, as you know, because I obviously went for election, so I was in the count centre. And on the spoiled votes, there was like four tables of stacked high of spoiled votes, right? Now, what they do then is they invite people from the different parties to go through the spoil votes with the adjudicator to decide if it's a genuine mistake and they can decide they can give it to somebody, right? They go through them all. But one of the most common things on the spoil vote is a picture of a penis.
Obviously. That's why I didn't want to say it, but yeah, usually it's that.
A picture of a willy. That's the most common
I think
thing.
It's everywhere the same.
Yeah. So anyway, as I say, the problem is, all of the political parties, with the exception of some independents, all of the political parties in this country, you know, all think the same way. And if everybody goes out and votes for independence, for change, for example, then you're in a situation where you have a government made up of a lot of independents and maybe one political party, you know, and it's completely disjointed. Because all of the independents, as good as they may be, they all think a little bit differently. So that's going to be very difficult.
That's the problem, but the reason why you can't change this is because if you do, you're a racist or against someone. Like,
yeah, we're all racist. Anyway, we must be all racist on this show. Anyway, so it's Jackie.
That's the problem we have in Italy. You can't say something against them because you're automatically a fascist.
Oh, you're a fascist. Yeah, well, let's talk to another fascist racist. Jackie, hi, how are you?
Yeah.
We're all a bunch of fascists and racists. Getting back to the original thing about Thornton Hall, I mean, Renzo makes a good point about the voting and what we could do and how we could change that in some way, because it does look like, you know, the same government will end up getting back in again, maybe a bit of sprinkling of Sinn Féin as well. But I mean, realistically, you know, are the government right by saying, well, look, it's out in Thornton Hall now, it's in the middle of nowhere, she shouldn't be bothering you?
No, again, they keep coming up with the same stuff. Oh, yeah, we must go and speak and interact with the community and try and, you know, dispel their fears and all the misinformation that's out there. And we must try and you know, give them the proper information and all that. And nothing happens. It's the same stuff the whole time. and forced into a community that do not have the services. Like, and just again, as
well, I'm assuming with Thornton Hall, because it's going to be such a big reception centre, I'm assuming what they're going to do is have their own medical centre within the reception centre. They'll probably have a shop you know, for food within the reception center. They, you know, and they'll have a cafe for dinners and everything else. So everything will be in there. Now, they will have a bus, I'm assuming, to go to Swords or Finglas, which is about 10 minutes away, on a daily basis. So that's where they're going to be hanging out.
Yeah, but why is it that they can do this stuff for people coming into the country, and yet they can't do this stuff for people who live here and pay taxes and whatever, and need doctors or need certain services, and they don't provide that for their own? But yet, they, you know, if they do that, and they can go along and they say, right, we have a dedicated doctor, we have a shop, we have whatever facilities there. But again, it's coming down back to why couldn't they do that for our own people?
Mm. I've been asking this question for years. I mean, all of a sudden we can pull out all the stops and spend $4.2 billion on refugees when we already had a housing crisis for 10 years and we couldn't spend that kind of money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then if you said anything or I said anything, you know, let's help our own. Oh, we're a racist. Yeah, we have over 4,000 children that's in temporary accommodation.
Yeah. Go now, you fash.
Is it up on... 15,000.
15,000 now. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's incredible. Like I don't understand. There's no logic here. But now I was looking at a post. I was trying to find it there while you were talking. Lawyers for Justice, and they shared something on about the budget that are the what the Department of Integration what they're getting per year.
Yeah.
And when you see they're saying, oh, it increased by 24%, but in actual fact, it increased by nearly 200%.
Mm.
The money, where is all this money? It's like, is there a cash tree somewhere that we don't know about?
No, the tree has died. No, well, it's our money, because obviously Ireland's economy is good at the moment. You know, we're all working, you know, we're all paying our taxes. You've got property taxes, you've got all different types of new charges and carbon taxes and all this kind of money. So there's a heap of money going into government, a lot more than there used to be. And we're spending a lot of it now, 4.2 billion of it last year, on refugees and asylum seekers. I think it was 4.2 or somewhere in around that. I mean, it's a ridiculous amount of money.
We have children that need procedures done now and should have been done years ago, and they can't get it. We have people living in houses that are falling apart.
I see people daily, you know. I know, little kid, opportunity to walk again on a GoFundMe online, you know, looking for a couple of thousand or whatever it is to send them off to Florida to get an operation or whatever it happens to be. And we can't even provide that for those children. But yet, suddenly, we can provide over 4 billion for people who don't even live here.
There's something really wrong.
Oh, there is.
Something seriously wrong with our system.
Thank you, Jackie. Jackie, I'm sorry, I have to cut you short. I do apologise, but there is something radically wrong with our system. Radically. You're on the money. And unfortunately, the election is going to come and it's going to go and you're all going to say, oh, we wanted a change, but we didn't get it. And that's because you don't go out and vote. So please do go out and vote. I've got a video that I'll have over the next couple of days that Madeline and Suzanne, who have been regulars on the show, and also Suzanne, who came out with me canvassing as well during the elections, they're putting together a video on how to vote, how to register to vote. Look, I don't care who you vote for, but you just need to go out and vote. The biggest problem during my election campaign was the amount of people who said they were going to vote for me, but didn't, because they didn't vote. It wasn't because they voted for somebody else. They just didn't vote. And some of the areas that I did really well in, we could have done a lot better if more people had voted in those areas. As low as 25% turnout for voting. They're just not registered, mainly working class areas. The areas that do the most amount of giving out, that are affected the most about all of these things, are the ones who vote the least. That's why Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil don't care about what happens in Coolock in relation to those protests. They just give out about just calling you as a bunch of right-wing people, because they don't lose a lot of votes out of that. Because most of their votes come from the south side. They'll come from Dunleary and Ratgar and Rapmines and Dalkey and Fairhouse and all those kind of fancy schmancy places. So that's where they get their votes. So they're not going to lose much by not keeping the people of Coolock happy, because the people of Coolock are probably never going to vote for them in the first place. Well, most of them won't. They'll vote for the Shinners. And I don't know why they'll vote for the Shinners, because they're not going to give you any change, because they're another cheek of the same arse, really, aren't they? So there's no point in voting for all of those. They're not going to do anything. If you want to go out and vote, vote for change. Vote for real change. Don't put the same arseholes in that have been in for the last 5 years. They're not listening to you anymore. They stopped listening to you about 3 or 4 years ago. So don't vote for them anymore. But I know you will. I know people will. Nicola, by the way, says on WhatsApp, it's not convenient at all, but yes, we'll out of sight, like an unoccupied island off the northwest of coast where it rains a lot, would be better than putting them in village hotels and give them some work to earn their keep. Trish says, while our own are ignored, housing, this government obviously making a profit on immigrants. Yes, they are one making a profit. No, the government are not making a profit on immigrants. They're spending your taxpayers' money. Who's making a profit on immigrants are the people who are running these hotels, accommodation centres, providing the food, the catering and all that kind of stuff. They're the ones who are getting very rich off the back of immigration. There's more money in immigration in this country now than there is in drug dealing, as far as I'm aware. I remember somebody saying that recently. Anyway, thank you to everybody who got involved in the show. Dove, again, we let you on the air to have your uncensored opinion. How long that will last, I don't know, because, of course, governments around the world are clamping down on social media and people having opinions, because even your opinion, by the way, could be considered to be insightful in some way because you don't agree with, say, a policy the government puts out. When the hate speech laws come along, let's see how we handle it then. Will we still be allowed to have people come on and have their opinion? I really hope so. We're fighting against that. And the way we're doing it is by trying to prepare and future-proof the show onto our website, as well as here on X and also on Facebook and other places as well, YouTube too. But I fear the likes of X and Facebook and YouTube, unfortunately, will succumb to censorship very shortly, if they're not gone altogether from the European Union, because as you know, the European Union and Elon Musk are not friends at the moment. So please help us to do that, future-proof it. We did try it the other day. We did a bit of an experiment. Unfortunately, tens of thousands of people all went to the website at the same time and it crashed. Now we're doing it. What we're doing at the moment is running it on the website, on Facebook, on X and on YouTube, and slowly building the website to make it more future proof. But we need your help to do that. So please donate or subscribe. You can subscribe on the website for €2 just to watch it live, for $5.99 if you want to watch all the previous episodes over the last year and a half. There's about 270 there now at this stage. Lots of interviews, by the way, that we never put out streamed. They're all exclusive content on the website. You can get them by subscribing. $5.99, price of a pint of beer for the three of us. You can donate if you want to. If you just want to give a one-off donation, you can easily do that on the website too. NileBoylan.com. Please do support us and support us to continue telling you about what's going on. Continue to allowing you to have your say, your opinion. Joe Duffy or any of those other shows, they won't let you do what we're doing. And we're Ireland's only fully interactive live podcast every day. Others claim to be fully interactive, but they're not. We're the only ones who are actually fully interactive every single day. Thank you very much indeed. Don't forget to join us again tomorrow, the usual time. No, actually, it'll be Monday. It's Monday because today's Thursday. Monday, the usual time. But keep an eye out over the weekend. We're going to throw up lots of stuff over the weekend, by the way. Some of the older episodes over the weekend, we're going to throw them up on social media. So keep an eye out over the weekend. Some really great interviews and stuff that we did in the past that people might have missed out on. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.